First case for argument is United States v. Mendoza-Sandoval.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Matthew Green. I represent the appellant in this case, Efrain Mendoza-Sandoval, who is not present and in the custody of the Bureau of Prisons serving a sentence of 104 months. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Mendoza-Sandoval's conviction should be reversed and the case should be remanded for a new trial because the district court deprived him of a proper official restraint jury instruction. Although this court has considered the doctrine of official restraint in a variety of contexts, the facts of this case most closely parallel those of U.S. v. Bail-Bahena, decided by this court in 2005, 41 F3rd 1083. In Bail-Bahena, a Border Patrol agent operating what was referred to as a night scope observed a group of people heading north in a desolate area near the U.S.-Mexico border. In this case, a Border Patrol agent operating something called the Remote Video Surveillance System camera observed a group traveling northwest in a rural and desolate area, again, near the U.S.-Mexico border. In each case, the camera or the scope operator agent communicated by radio with other Border Patrol agents while continuing to observe and constantly observe the respective groups with the surveillance equipment. Likewise, in each case, the surveilling Border Patrol agent led the other Border Patrol agents to the defendants who were subsequently apprehended. In neither case was there testimony that the defendants were seen prior to the camera or the scope operator's initial visual contact inside the border. And in both cases, the record established that the defendants could have been observed by the government's personnel using the government's surveillance equipment crossing the border.
So what are the facts that you think were sufficient? You're basically talking about whether you should have gotten instruction.
Yes.
And what are the facts that you think support that, that it was possible to observe him because of the camera?
Well, Your Honor, again, the reason why not only was it possible, but the record establishes through the camera operator's testimony, Agent Matthew Kowecki, that it was most likely possible and probable that other groups were seen crossing the border that day.
Okay.
Now, the reason why that is significant is because, again, in Bail-Bahena, the facts were that there was initial visual contact by a Border Patrol agent using surveillance equipment. And the record was absolutely silent. There was no evidence, no testimony whatsoever that that particular Border Patrol agent who was had initial contact using surveillance saw the defendant while he was crossing. The only thing that was ultimately the most significant item to the court in that case was that a reasonable inference to that could have been drawn. In this case, there are even more facts.
But in Bail-Bahena, did the agent say that he didn't see him?
No. The agent said nothing. The record was just silent.
All right. But here he said, I didn't see him until you picked him up two miles north of the border.
Right. Well, in Bail-Bahena, there was testimony not of the actual sighting agent, okay? The surveilling agent did not testify, apparently, at trial. In this case, the camera operator did testify. What the Bail-Bahena court said was that even though there was no evidence whatsoever of potential sighting, the reasonable inference could have been drawn. In this case, the reason why there is that reasonable inference is laid out specifically in Agent Kowecki's testimony.
However, in Vela Robles, our 2005 case, we say must be in the visual or physical grasp of the authorities at all times to show that he or she was under official restraint. Reading this record, which I tried to read as best I could, there is no evidence to suggest that anybody was in the visual or physical grasp of authorities until the officer suggests that he saw them, and at that point he suggests what he did. I mean, there is no evidence in this record to suggest anybody else saw them.
Well, Your Honor, if I may.
Where is the evidence?
The evidence is, I would respectfully submit, is at least as substantial, if not more, than the evidence in Bayo Bahena. And here's why. There was no evidence whatsoever, none, that the camera operator in Bayo Bahena ever saw the defendant until he was a quarter to a half mile within the United States border. That's Bayo Bahena.
But Castellanos-Garcia suggests that the fact that as many as 15 agents may have seen the defendant cross the border, and this is may have, is not enough to get the instruction. Mere conjecture is not enough. That's what it says right in that case. 270, Fed Third.
And, Your Honor, in Bayo Bahena, the court went out of its way to distinguish the facts in the Bayo Bahena case from the facts in the Castellanos case. In the Bayo Bahena case, what the court says, while distinguishing that, is that there is a claim of constant surveillance, or excuse me, the claim of constant surveillance in Bayo Bahena had a basis in evidence, while in the Castellanos-Garcia case, the evidence suggested the defendant was not under any form of surveillance prior to apprehension. That's ultimately what Castellanos-Garcia case said.
What is the surveillance here? Is the surveillance that he was under surveillance or that there was surveillance of the border?
Your Honor, and if I can try to put this in what I think is the more appropriate context, this is not there, – there's two forms of official restraint cases that this Court has decided. There's Rule 29 in verdict cases, and then there's theory of the defense in jury instruction cases. And in no way, shape, or form are we – is the appellant arguing today that this evidence is necessarily strong enough to overcome a Rule 29 motion or to prevail. All we are saying is that there was at the very least – enough evidence supported in the record and to warrant a jury instruction. And
counsel, let me
never answered Judge Schroeder's question.
You didn't. Her question was very – I was going to say answer her question.
Okay. And you wanted to know what the evidence is. Is that right, Your Honor?
I want to know whether he was subject to surveillance or whether he – the area was – the border was subject to surveillance and he could have been under surveillance.
The area was subject to surveillance and he could have been subject to surveillance, just like the defendant in Bayo Bahena.
But you would say about that that that's a piece of evidence.
Yes.
And the question is that enough? The fact that it could have been under – enough to get you an instruction.
I think that it is enough standing by itself, but there is substantially more than that in this case. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to inform the court of
what
right.
Else is it? Yeah, it would be helpful to me to know what else.
Please. Thank you.
I mean, the sure. Honest truth is we're here, aren't we, on an abuse of discretion standard?
Correct.
And so we've got a district court who has these cases in front of him. He's trying to make these situations. The best I found in the record is he might have been, that it was possible to be.
Your Honor,
which is, I mean, now we're talking about abuse of discretion and whether to give this jury instruction. Well, so we've looked at one piece of evidence. What else is there?
Sure. Your Honor, there's testimony that in a, just like in Bayo Bahena, the agent's proximity to the border and the powerfulness of the camera, no problem seeing people coming across. Although although the camera's 3 miles from the border, you can see people waving across in Mexico. The camera was one of 29 cameras that make up this remote video surveillance system. Each is operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Agent, the most important testimony comes in the exhibits, excerpts of record at 131, when Agent Kowecki concedes that up to three other camera operators may have been working the night that the defendant was observed and arrested. There's up to four camera operators at any given time, including potentially at that night. Now, as Your Honor mentioned, I submit that is evidence. That is affirmative evidence. It was elicited on the record. Agent Kowecki also testified that he and other NACO camera operators have personally seen through that camera undocumented immigrants crossing over the border. But the most important piece of testimony is when Agent Kowecki admitted that it is not only that it's possible that the RVS system, remote video surveillance system, could have captured images of undocumented aliens crossing the border on that night.
I think we have
but that they probably did.
But the difference, it seems to me, between this and Bailo-Bahena is that Bailo-Bahena, the person who actually first picked them up, we don't know. It never said, I only saw them at that point.
He did not testify, correct?
Nobody ever said that he picked them up at that point. But in this instance, the person who picked them up and caused them to be who caused them to be picked up says, that's the first time I saw them.
That's correct.
And so if, presumably, if anybody else had seen them earlier, they would have reported them to be picked up, no?
Well, Your Honor, again, I think that would be problematic in
why?
from a burden of proof standpoint, because what we have is affirmative evidence, not only that the remote video surveillance system is operated by up to four other people, we have affirmative evidence in the form of Kowecki's testimony as well that three other people could have been.
Okay. I think right. We do understand what the gist of your argument is. Do you want to touch on any of your other points, because you have about a minute before you asked for time to reserve?
Your Honor, actually, this is really the primary point that I did want to touch on, but what I would ask the Court to consider is, again, the case law about theory of defense that has been well established in this Court for many years. Not only is it cited in Bailo-Bahena, but also in Cruz Escoto, and that is a defendant is entitled to instruction if the theory of the case, if the theory is legally sound and the evidence that makes it applicable or that makes it applicable, even if the evidence is weak, insufficient, inconsistent, and of doubtful credibility. That is important.
I have one question, which I think the answer to is obvious, but I just want to be sure. You're not claiming that the fact that the cameras were could have seen these people makes a difference if nobody saw him?
No, I am not claiming that. It's just that the government has failed to prove beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt that one of those other three people did not see my client crossing the border.
Okay. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Chris Cavanias from the District of Arizona. I think the Court's questions have demonstrated that it's hit the nail on the head in terms of the issue. I mean, it really is, it was not an abuse of discretion for Judge Burry to decline to give the instruction in this particular.
I take it he could have
given
it.
I'm sorry?
Are you suggesting that he had the discretion to have given it?
He had the discretion to have given it, although I think, you know, his own words demonstrate that he thought, and I'll quote him, there's no evidence other than mere speculation that Mr. Mendoza was seen at any time before a point about 2 miles north of the border. And that's the
that that much is true in Bailo-Bahena as well, no?
I'm sorry?
That much is also true in Bailo-Bahena.
Well, you know, judging from what this Court described about Bailo-Bahena, which was not addressed in our answering brief, and if I need to file a letter on that, I will. The defendant relied mostly on Cruz Escoto below, and so today, you know, he's relying on this Bailo case. But based on the descriptions that both of you gave, it does sound distinguishable in terms of its facts, because we do have evidence from Agent Kowecki, which said the first time I saw this guy was 2.5 miles north of the border, and that's the only evidence we have of any prior sight of this individual. And that's significant, because we can't have a rule, and I guess if we break the defendant's argument down to brass tacks, the rule would be, because there's any camera that's trained on the border, and because there may be operators who may be seeing him cross the border at whatever time, we're not sure, and what day, we're not sure, that would then make this person under constant surveillance. And that's exactly what the district court said. It would be totally illogical to have that rule at ER 235, because then every person crossing the border would be under surveillance. And that's not the rule.
The district court obviously apparently believed the testimony that he was not seen until he was across.
Yes, I mean, that's the finding.
That's where the room for discretion would be. If there was any doubt about that, he might have given an instruction.
And I think that if we review that, that's a factual finding made at 235.
But that doesn't make sense, does it? I mean, the district court, I was about to say the opposite, actually. Yeah. The district court doesn't get to make a determination about whether the person who said he saw him 2.5 miles up north of the border was telling the truth.
It's not that, Your Honor. It's the district court's statement that there's a complete absence of contrary, that there's absolutely no evidence in the record to suggest
somebody didn't
he may have been seen crossing.
Somebody didn't believe the person who said I only saw him 2.5 miles and thinks he saw him earlier.
Well, there's no evidence to support that anybody saw him earlier. I think that's the problem the district court had here, because, you know, you may recall from the record, the district court the night before, I believe, was kind of pondering whether to give this. And then the government asked the district court to reserve judgment on whether it would give this instruction so that law could be provided. And the Castellanos-Garcia case is right on point, where this court, in terms of the general notion, free-floating speculation is just not enough.
You
and that's what we have here.
You can't say that there's evidence that he was seen just on the basis of somebody who said he wasn't.
Well, we don't even.
I mean, when the only evidence in the record is that he wasn't, is that what?
Yeah, I mean, if the only evidence in the record is I saw him 2.5 miles north of the border, and there's absolutely no evidence that anybody saw him before that, then what you have here is there's just no free-floating speculation, and that's what the district court ruled here, frankly. And you know, the Cruz Escoto case that was relied on so strongly by the defendant below just really actually supports the district court if you take a look at that case. On that issue, does the court have any more questions?
I don't believe so.
Then with that, I'm just going to look here, see if there's anything.
I do have one question, which is kind of a little off to the side, which is, in all of these cases, we struggle with this question of surveillance and whether the person was seen crossing the border. But in this instance, you very clearly did not allege an attempt to enter. And I don't understand why you set the cases up that way in general. I understand that you have to prove specific intent to prove an attempt to enter, but I don't understand why this case wouldn't have been a very easy attempt to enter and there was no reason to get into all this.
Well, you know, I think maybe because he was found, I can't speak for the charging AUSA or our office in that context. It's not in the record.
I know, but
it's
not just in this case. It's more general.
He's there 2.5 miles north. So, I mean, I think that, you know, and he's discovered 2.5 miles inside the United States. I think that's... I mean, I'm speaking off my head here, but that would be a rational reason why he's charged with illegal entry. He was, in fact, here 2.5 miles north. With that, then, I guess I'll just rely on the answering brief and for any of the other arguments you make.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think it's important to remember that ultimately what all of the precedent holds and what this body of law holds is that, again, the rule is that official restraint is it's the burden of the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is free from official restraint. Again, we are not arguing that this should have been a judgment of acquittal and it was strong enough. We're just arguing that Mr. Mendoza-Sandoval was, at the very least, entitled to advance his theory of the defense, and that there was, at the very least, that scintilla of evidence, which really seems to be the test that was laid out by the Castellanos-Garcia court, and again referenced in Bello-Bejena and the subsequent.
So you really want a bright-line rule that if there's evidence that he could have been seen, that the jury is entitled to instruction and that's sufficient to find that he was seen?
I think that is the bright-line rule that Bello-Bejena lays out already. So were there any other questions the Court had for me?
I don't believe so. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case just argued is submitted for decision.